This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Area are especially encouraged to run. The nomination period closes on September 25th. For more details on the election, how to declare yourself a candidate, or nominate someone else as a candidate, visit KPFT's website. That's www.kpft.org. Again, that's www.kpft.org for election information. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbian, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. Tonight we have James Campbell. The Houston Chronicle's reader representative will talk about the response to articles printed during June as part of coverage of Pride and the approach towards GLBT issues in the current mainstream media. Hopefully, we will have a great interview with him. Carol Wyatt will be here and talking about what she does on her web email, including all her political rant. And then Jeff Reed's going to join us from the Houston Equal Rights Alliance talking about the scheduled vote for family marriage amendment scheduled tomorrow in the House of Representatives. All that stuff plus This Way Out news wrap and all the other wonderful stuff from This Way Out that is continuing to come to us. So we're very happy about that. I'm Jack Falinski.
This is Jennifer Renee.
I'm Deborah Bell.
J.D. Doyle.
Greg Chapman.
And Glenn Holt.
And we have all that coming up. Just trying to keep up with some of the things going on. It is hot out there, isn't it? It's incredibly hot out there, and it's that time of the year. So we are waiting for our first interview. But before that, J.D., you want to update us on what you're going to be doing next week for Q-Mer?
Next week on Queer Music Heritage is my coverage of the Out Music Awards that I attended in June 11th in New York. So I'll be bringing all the winners of all the categories, all the awards, and some extras. So I'm, you know, really pleased with that. Pleased to share that music. These are artists that you should know about.
Fabulous. And you always keep us up to date on that. I know you love going to New York for the Queer Music Awards every year. With us this evening is James Campbell. He became the reader's representative for the Chronicle in 2002. He also has been a board member of the editorial board since 1992. In 1991, Campbell received national attention after becoming the center of a First Amendment court dispute involving the reporters' right to protect their news sources. Prior to the Chronicle, Campbell was a reporter at the Houston Post. Campbell, a native Houstonian, is a graduate of the University of Houston. He also is a recipient of the Charles Edison Memorial Fellowship at George Washington University. Campbell is a former board member of the National Association of Black Journalists. He is a former director of the Press Club of Houston and a former president of the Houston Association of Black Journalists. And James, I don't know if you've heard me say this before, but I used to hate the Chronicle. And it's come a long way. And it's not just because of the issues that I think are being dealt more fairly on GLBT, but just the fact that, and it's a sad fact that less people are reading the newspaper these days, and probably less younger people are reading the newspaper than before. Yet I think the Chronicle, in its redesign and what it's covering, is trying to become a more open medium to grab that audience. And also the fact that if you watch commercial television, you don't really get much of the news. And to be informed in this community, you really need to read the paper.
So you want to tell me what you really think?
Well, and if people know me, I don't butter up our guests unless I really feel that way.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad that, and first of all, thanks for having me here to talk about this issue. I appreciate being on to speak directly to listeners and readers of the Chronicle, particularly about issues that concern your community and the feedback that I get when people call me. I think you were right on in assessing the Chronicle and the evolution that it's gone through, so to speak, in terms of how we covered particular communities. Once upon a time, you never saw a black or Hispanic or Asian person in the Chronicle. All you saw were white people. And so if you wanted to get an accurate portrayal of Houston, you wasn't going to get it in the Chronicle. And so over the years, and I've been there for 18 years now,
wow.
I've watched it evolve to be more accepting of different points of views. And I think that's really accelerated since Jeff Cohen took over as editor of the Chronicle. And so,
well, and there's a history of the Chronicle. I mean, we used to be a two newspaper town,
yes.
Houston Post and the
yes.
Chronicle. But the Chronicle was owned by the Houston Endowment.
Yes, it was.
And it was, it was
locally owned, and it was very friendly to the downtown establishment, and so, which means the business community. And being accepting of a community and being in business is not a mutually exclusive concept, because the Chronicle, for instance, and the Hearst Corporation offer domestic partner benefits. And so that is something that Houston business community has evolved to, and the Houston Chronicle has participated in that evolution in recent years. And so I like that, because as I wrote in my column, that this year I think we did the best Pride coverage that I've seen since I've been there. We took it from caricature and stereotype, the picture of, you know, two, you know, guys together dressed, you know,
outlandishly.
Exactly.
And at the same time, I have a personal interest in it, being mm-hmm. the executive director of Pride, but mm-hmm. but I do remember in the old days we used to see a picture of something from San Francisco, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it should be noted that it is somewhat difficult for the Chronicle to cover the parade, because the deadline of when you put the paper together
mm-hmm.
versus the deadline of when the parade is happening
mm-hmm.
is interesting. But, I mean, not too long ago.
I'm glad that y'all started having it at night,
well,
so people wouldn't have to, die from heat exhaustion participating.
Well, and not to be a superstitious person, but somehow it's always worked out that it hasn't rained on our parade. and we haven't quite, you know, we
the
don't.
The Houston Festival could have such
Exactly. Or the Bunny's Party or any of these other
yeah.
things. Of course, I shouldn't be a little too, you know, because it could always rain yeah. someday on us.
Don't be cavalier about that.
Well, and after Anise got elected, I think it was Anise Parker, the last election, there was a picture of Anise and her partner, Kathy Hubbard, and the kids in the Chronicle with a little caption under there, and there was no comment. It was just like, this is her family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of fact.
And that's exactly what I was writing about. I think that as a newspaper, we need to mainstream the community in a way that we let people know that you have issues just like we have issues, and that you have families, and that you go to church, and that you're students. All those things that affect the heterosexual community affects your community. And so we need to tell that story that, look, they have issues. They're just normal, ordinary people. And we have to realize that and tell that story. And I think we've done a really excellent job in telling that story. I think that people who write me, who are of the conservative right, basically don't want to accept that. They basically want us to make a moral call. And that's not our job. Our job is to report what is going on in our community. And I'm not talking about some, you know, like I think the story that we did about the police officer, I think it's Julia Oliver, who wanted to, you know, in that environment, in that culture, I thought that was a very interesting story.
I was incredibly surprised, because it was like, we're not being judgmental here. Well, actually, I was sort of surprised at how the story went, that the police department, in a sense, was embracing her.
Yeah, yeah.
From the old days, and, you know, certainly we know the Ray Hill stories about what and I remember some of the times when HPD was this good old, well, the whole city was a good old city.
Absolutely, as I wrote in the column as well, back in the day, the only thing that you read about the gay community was Ray Hill, and it was far more diverse than that. And I think that, you know, Ray has done a wonderful job of kind of stepping out the way and letting the evolution happen with other leaders like yourself. And but the thing that I like most about that story, one, is that the way we played it, the picture that we ran, and, you know, back in the day, that picture wouldn't have ran.
Absolutely.
That picture wouldn't have even gotten close. We would have showed a picture of him in his HPV uniform and not as Julia. And so that's what I appreciate about how we've evolved as a newspaper, and I think that's something that we need to continue to do. And I'll tell you, I remember the first time that one of my first experiences, this happened several years ago, Sue Knoll and her husband Jim with P-Fly came in to just kind of educate us, and it's about educating.
Came in there to tell you
basically what we were going wrong and what we needed to do to mainstream this the community and to let them know that yes, there are parents out here who support and love their children, but they happen to be gay. And so you are telling that story. And she's been a great mentor in this regard, and I depend on her feedback when we do stuff right and when we do stuff wrong. And I want to also encourage the rest of the community to call us, write me, or send me an email. I got a lot of wonderful emails when that column came out that supported me, so I was really happy about that.
Well, and actually, the precursor to this was on Pride Day, Tim Fleck wrote an editorial on, that it's a city of tolerance.
Yes, absolutely.
And I was, since that day, I kept looking at the letters to start reading, some of the negative letters, but it was an incredible editorial that he talked about how the city has moved forward and the fact that we have two openly gay elected officials that were elected citywide, and that this city has changed and it has grown up, and we still have problems. There's no two ways about it. But the fact that the city has changed from its good old boys to be more accepting, and to be, that all of us deserve that right to be covered and to celebrate.
Absolutely. I covered Anise when she first was elected to council. I know Sue when she came to run for office the first time and the second time. My son plays in the near town Little League, where Sue is a, coach and board member and participant, and I want to beat her as badly as she wants. My team wants to beat her, and her team wants to beat mine. But you're right. I've watched that evolution. It is something. Houston has one of the largest gay communities in the country, and for the Chronicle to ignore that community is not really giving an accurate portrayal of the city. And I think Tim being able to write an editorial like that, and us being able to write, we had the op-ed on Sunday about the ruling in New York on the same-sex marriage issue, and for us to run a story Sunday about the transgender scientist who basically said, that prejudice existed not because, a person was because they were women. Women were treated differently from.
Now, do you still have to fight for some of these things that when you?
No, because there is acceptance in our newsroom that these are real stories, and no, the fight is not there anymore. The fight is basically finding those stories and making sure that we're telling them, and having your community call us. And there are contacts in the newsroom now. I mean, when I started at the Chronicle, if somebody was gay or lesbian or transgender or bi, you didn't know it because, they were either afraid to come out for whatever reason, probably because they would lose their job.
Well, I have a question on that, actually.
Well, and let me just say this. In the newsrooms, TV and the newspaper, sometimes our worst enemy is if one of the assignment editors was one of us, because they didn't want it let known that they were gay, so they would never try to pitch a story.
That's changed now.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think there was a fear there. It's like a fear that exists, in the black community, in that, you have a lot of gay men who are on down low, the DL, because they're afraid of coming out to their family or their community. And so you had that back in the day, but that doesn't exist anymore. I think that people are free to express themselves, and that's where you get the good stories about all communities.
Yeah, I was just curious if you thought, kind of along these lines, if you thought that the current media representation by gays and lesbians was helpful or hurtful, and kind of whether or not there was a rising comfort level, which you sort of already addressed, among gays and lesbians and transgender people.
I think so. I think that that there's a comfort level. Like, for instance, several months ago, we hosted representatives from the gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender journalists, and they came in to, you know, talk about, you know, what we were doing, how we could do it better. We even, as I wrote, we are informed and instructed by their style book in terms of the language we should use, and but yeah, I think there's a real comfort level. Like, as I was getting ready to say, when I first started at the Chronicle, you know, if somebody was gay, I didn't know it because they didn't want to come out like that.
Right.
But now, you know, it's that prerogative whether or not they want to identify as gay or not. You know, they don't have to be afraid to say, I'm gay, I'm lesbian, I'm transgender. That's not a problem at the Chronicle anymore, and I think that's a good thing. Yeah. It shows that, you know, that we were teachable and we were open to instruction.
Well, there were two things I wanted to follow up on. Was one, the editorials. I thought it was just excellent, and the way you handled the Sergeant Oliver story. Mm-hmm. What I like to see is what happened was it turned out to be a non-story.
Absolutely.
It was, and you know, 5 years ago even, or you know, maybe 10 if you want to stretch it that far, there's no way that could have happened. The good old boy, the Bubba system was in effect, but where her captain would stand there, put his arm around her and say, I support her.
Absolutely.
You know, the chief of police, the mayor, in the city government has a policy for that.
Right.
Now, the city we don't have that.
Right.
And there's no protection citywide for the GLBT community, but at least within the city government, we do.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. When we did that story, I got emails from people saying, you know, you shouldn't have ran that picture of her because they didn't say her, they said him, because, you know, I want my child to read the newspaper, and I want to make sure that they don't see that kind of stuff. And, I mean, just really nasty stuff. But, you know, who knows? That child might learn something from that. And so, yes, it was a non-story. In my mind, I'm just glad that we were able to do it. And I was glad that she was able to get the acceptance that she had within the department. That's a difficult culture.
Yes.
And as I wrote, you know, I don't know that I could have, like, had that kind
of courage. Well, look at how it's changed from the day they announced that Lee Brown was going to be chief of police, and how bad it was, terrible it was back then for him to be a black person to take over the police department, be an outsider, which was probably even worse to that culture, to where we're coming today.
It was tough.
And I'm sure there's still some problems in that. Now, what about the endorsements?
Mm-hmm.
The endorsements that you do for elections,
mm-hmm.
and there's still, I think, some work there. I mean, the Chronicle did endorse George Bush for president. I know that was a difficult thing.
You noticed that, huh?
Yes.
Well, we haven't, you know, this is the thing that's so ironic to me, I guess, is that I have these people who identify to the right who basically call in and say that we're this liberal rag. We haven't endorsed a Democrat for president since LBJ. For those of you who are old enough who know what the initials LBJ stand for, we haven't endorsed a Democrat for president since Lyndon Baines Johnson. And so, look, you know, it's not that we are this flaming liberal rag. You know, if you read us, as I tell these people who try to label us either way, I always say, look, we are, you know, you can't take a snapshot of what we do on a daily basis. You have to read us every day to really get a real picture of who we are. Because one day we may have, a bunch of stuff in there that goes to the conservative side. One day we might do something that's really, really liberal. But with endorsements, we have evolved in terms of all candidates. We endorse people who we believe will do the best job for whatever office office they're running for. But I'll tell you this. I was talking to the West Houston Democrats, and there are more than one over in West Houston, on Saturday. And one of the things that I told them is that, look, we'd love to endorse some judicial candidates who are Democrats, but they don't run. And so, you know, when you have an entire Republican slate coming in, you know, what are you going to do? You have Democrats becoming Republicans to run for judicial races, but we would love to see more Democrats in. The party needs to put some people up. And we will look at them and endorse them on the merits. But for presidential elections, I think you might see a change.
The governor's race? They haven't come out with the endorsement yet.
The governor's race, that governor's race is really going to be tricky because, you know, I have a personal preference, as we all do on the board. But I'll tell you this, that governor's race is really going to be tricky because you have, you know, Perry and Kinky Friedman and Chris Bell and Grandma, Carol Keaton Rylander. So it's going to be, you know, I can't wait till those discussions start.
That's going to be interesting. Yeah. There's also Libertarian running, too.
Yeah, well, that's you know, I'm glad you brought that up because that we don't really do really well with third-party candidates. We have them
The whole system doesn't do very well with third-party candidates.
But we need to, you know, take them more seriously when they run for offices. But then we don't. And you know, we have them in, you know, to kind of humor them, I think. But we need to really take them serious. But they also need to, you know,
have a serious campaign.
Absolutely. And so, this is going to be an interesting election season coming up. And I want that to happen like really quick. I wish we could fast forward to it right now.
Well, and there's a whole bunch of things going up, including redistricting, which is just a terrible Supreme Court decision because it's going to be crazy for every state when redistricting.
Right. It's going to affect us too.
Absolutely.
As we wrote on Friday, the redistricting will affect at least four districts. And so that's going to have kind of a domino effect to it. But that's time delay. That's the man we all know and love.
Well, I want to think the fact that it, you know, you started talking about that GLBT issues are mainstream, that we're just we're like everyone else, and that concerns, you know, we care about flooding, we care about safety,
environment,
you know, and the environment, you know, we want our kids to be able to breathe the air.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, and speaking of that issue, and I actually put that whole series on the side and never did read it until I was listening to Living on Earth,
mm-hmm.
an NPR program, and they were talking to one of the Chronicle reporters.
Dana Capiello.
Yes, and it was just a fabulous story. Now, wait a minute. I'm in Houston,
mm-hmm.
and the Chronicle actually helped fund putting up extra checkpoints?
Absolutely. Dana Capiello was somebody that we brought in from New York, and she's an actual scientist, and she basically decided, okay, instead of, like, depending on the agencies, we're going to go out and ask the people over in Magnolia to let us put up these monitors so we can monitor air quality in your community to see how bad it is. And that really started a sea change in the way the city and the state looks at environmental issues.
Now, isn't the Chronicle sometimes biting the hand that feeds them in this sense? Well, I mean, isn't there a lot of advertising money that comes from those big corporations?
Well, not really. I mean, you have the, you know, petroleum companies who do retail business, Chevron, Shell, Exxon. But, you know, how many Exxon and Shell and Chevron ads have you seen in the Chronicle recently? Not many. I mean, we get our advertising dollars from a diversity of businesses, and as well we should. But who we get our advertising from is not going to stop us from telling the story. And that's the Chronicle of today. The Chronicle of yesterday, that story may not have seen the light of day.
I've noticed the editorials have become a lot more favorable over time. The letters that they print about those editorials still seem to be fairly negative for the most part.
Well, this is, having done the letters, the letters depend on, you know, we always try to tell people, if you have a problem with anything with the Chronicle, write a letter. Because if Judy Minshew, who's the letters editor and a very good one, if she doesn't have any on the other side, what are we going to do? And so what we do is we run some letters that kind of acrimonious to a particular issue, and we start getting letters from the other side. So that's how it works. But if you feel strongly about an issue, write a letter, and we will run it. But, you know, she does a really good job of vetting those letters. And, I do it occasionally when she's on vacation. And
I have to tell you, I've written probably 350 to 400 letters. And
you are a prolific letter writer.
And the only two that were printed, one was a local issue that wasn't political, and only one political one was.
Well, let me tell you how that happens. Letters are very topical. We like current issues. If you're writing about an issue,
it's always current.
Okay. Well, a lot of times, you know, it's a bit of a lottery because when you write, I mean, we try to take the letters that are best written letters, the ones that are written succinctly. That's the most important thing, and you have to have some opinion. You can't write a dissertation and expect for it, because when people write me long letters and I edit them down, they go, you edited all the good parts. Well, I thought I kept in all the good parts. And so you have to make sure that you write a letter with strong opinion and one that's topical, and it gets into the lottery, and whatever happens, happens. But we don't say, oh, this guy wrote, and so we aren't going to run his letter because we don't like you. We don't know you most of the time, and so we don't know you until we call you and say, hey, you won the lottery. We're going to run your letter tomorrow. Judy gets hundreds of letters every day, and she has to go find the best 10 to run in the paper.
We're talking to James T. Campbell, who's the reader's representative for the Houston Chronicle. Well, one of the things that maybe you can help out our audience, let's say, we know how to do this at Pride, and some of the bigger organizations do it. How does your story get told in the Chronicle? If you have a fun run, or if you have some type of a fundraiser or something, how can you better get your chances of getting that covered?
That's a good point. What you should do, one, is read the paper and find out where it fits. We have the neighborhood section. We have the features department. If you have a fun run, call the sports department. There's a lady who specifically deal with things like that. Roberta McGinnis writes a runner's column every week. Comes out every Thursday. If you have a fun run, call Roberta and say, Roberta, we're having this fun run that we're trying to raise money. We do a little brief for us, and she may end up doing a whole column about it. If you're having, you know, an event that's a social thing, call Shelby Hodge. Shelby, can you send somebody, you know, to take a picture, or can you run something in your column about this? If you have something that has to do with HIV/AIDS, call Lee Hopper, who's the medical reporter, to write about it. It's any number of ways, but I can be a conduit for that. Send me an email, james.campbell@cron.com, or call me, 713-362-6303, and I will get it to the appropriate
and
editor.
one of the golden rules about when somebody calls you from the media, return that call immediately.
Yeah,
because you're always on deadline.
Absolutely. Hey, well, you're teachable, aren't you?
Let me tell you, I was one Saturday night, I was at the Ripcord at 10 p.m. and I got a call from the Chronicle concerning a death of a person.
Oh.
And you know, you're on deadline. You've got to get that story out there, and the Chronicle's a 24-hour business to get that paper out there.
And if it's a traumatic situation like that, and you need a minute to gather your thoughts,
sure.
Tell a reporter, look, you know, just give me a couple of minutes. Let me have your number and your name, and I'll call you right back.
And it's also okay that if somebody asks you a question that you don't know anything about, call somebody else who may be the best, you know, the best responder to that. I get calls lots of times, and it's not necessarily a Pride issue or a caucus issue. I will say, well, why don't you talk to maybe Sunol, or why don't you talk? I mean, well, and exactly, this was how the story was set up for Pride. And I'm sorry, I forgot that the gentleman who wrote the story, but
it was Zeke.
No, I think it was...
Oh, David Ellison.
David Ellison.
Yeah.
Well, he called me, and he says, well, I'm going to do this. And he actually called me very early.
Yeah.
He called me about 4 weeks out, and he says, we're going to do some Pride stories. You know, give me some suggestions. And then I mentioned, of course, that, well, this is different. This year, we're going to have the Conroe GLSA group marching in the parade.
That was a great story.
And he went out and researched it and did a great job. And then the day of the event, he interviewed Maria Gonzalez from U of H.
Did a Q&A with her.
And that was a great thing, too. And so, you know, you have to sort of have some answers. And
yes.
You know, we're not all as smart as Ray Hill to be able to make those things up at the top of a...
Ray is the smartest, isn't he? But, you know, the way I looked at that coverage, it was comprehensive. And it was about different things. Kids in Conroe who are going to march in the parade, a Q&A, you know, with a leader in the community. You were available. I mean, it was just such, I was very proud of what we did. And I was able to say, I like to be able, as Reader's Representative, I like to be able to say, look, this is what we did. And if we don't go out and do those kinds of stories, you know, I'm at a loss to defend that. But if somebody calls and say, well, what are you doing about our community? I can say, well, this is what we did. And then that person who probably hadn't read will say, oh, okay. Or they might say, well, you need to do more. You know, I can never satisfy them. But it's always good to have the ammunition to say, this is what we did. And I'm able to say that now more than ever before.
What about pressure from the conservative readers who say, you know, you shouldn't be doing that kind of thing, and there's certainly a large segment of your readership. I know so many conservative people who told me time and time and again they're going to cut out their Chronicle subscription. And, I mean, they're just, like, ranting and raving all the time. And I would think that would have to have some impact. I mean, you don't want to lose... I mean, you're a business, so
you've been eavesdropping on my phone calls. But yeah, I get those calls, and I just have to tell them, sorry, we're going to do these stories. And if we lose one conservative reader, hopefully we can get one who appreciates what we do, because we do cover, you know, communities comprehensively. And so that doesn't really bother me. I listen to their concerns, but, you know, to me, it's whether their concern is legitimate or whether it comes from, you know, a religious point of view or political. And, you know, they have the right to express that, but and I listen. But, you know, the reality is we are going to cover the communities, all of the communities in Houston, and the gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender community is a part of Houston, and we're going to cover the community flat out. There's no question about it, and I think that we've been doing a better job of doing that, and I hope that members of the community call us to let us know about those stories that I call those mainstream, everyday stories. But now, we do stories about, you know, remarkable things happening. After all, we are a newspaper, and we want to provide something that's interesting for people to read. And so, you know, if you have an interesting story, please call us, and we'll do it.
That's a great segue to something I wanted to say. Other than doing this, I'm also president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. And from the caucus and from the community, I want to thank you for the efforts you've made, and the Chronicle, everyone at the Chronicle who has taken time just to write our stories. Because that's the one thing that most of the conservatives don't want to agree, that we have a whole lot more in common than we do different.
Mm-hmm.
We all care about flooding. We care about police safety.
Mm-hmm.
We care about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are important. It's important for that word to get out of our commonality of purpose, not our differences.
Absolutely.
Which you really like to point out.
And I think what you have to do is, back when Ray Hill was the only candidate running from your community, you know, it was easy to cover. Now you have a caucus. Now you have viable candidates. And And so Kristen Mack and other people, our political reporter and other reporters on the city desk, our political editor, need to be mindful of that. And but it also takes some work on your part in making sure that these people know about what your issues are, mm-hmm. and if you are in solidarity with somebody else. You know, you may be in solidarity on flooding with people over in that West Houston area, which is largely John Culberson's area.
Oh, yes.
And so that there you go. But you have to make sure that our reporters know that, and so we can tell those stories. And that's the main thing, is making sure that we know about those stories and being accessible to the reporters so they can talk to you about them.
We've been talking to James Campbell, who is the Houston Chronicle's reader representative. If you'd like to contact him, the best way is via email. That's james.campbell@cron.com. And the two particular things that we were talking about is an editorial that appeared on June 24th on a Saturday called City of Tolerance, and then his response to it, which was a little bit more than a week. It was July 1st, and it was his stories about gays deserve to be in the mainstream. And that was in the op-ed section of the Chronicle. James, thank you for being here this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
I really do appreciate you inviting me in, and please invite me back if any issues come up, and I will keep you informed about what's going on. And I really do appreciate the support. Thank you.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the weekend in July 15th, 2006. Rulings affecting four U.S. states this week continue the recent spate of court decisions against marriage equality for gay and lesbian couples. In what may be the most troubling for queer legal advocates, a unanimous three-judge panel of the federal 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals reinstated Nebraska's six-year-old voter-approved constitutional ban on legal recognition of lesbian and gay couples. While prohibiting same-gender marriage, the amendment also states that the uniting of two persons of the same sex in a civil union, domestic partnership, or other similar same-sex relationship shall not be valid or recognized in Nebraska, making it perhaps the most restrictive marriage law in the country. The Eighth Circuit overturned a lower court decision last year that the ban was too broad and deprived gay men and lesbians of full participation in the political process. Lambda Legal and the American Civil Liberties Union's Lesbian and Gay Project argued that the amendment violated the fundamental rights of gay and lesbian people. But Nebraska Attorney General John Bruning said that plaintiffs are free to gather, express themselves, lobby, and generally participate in the political process however they see fit. The appellate judges wrote that laws limiting the state-recognized institution of marriage to heterosexual couples are rationally related to legitimate state interests and therefore do not violate the Constitution of the United States. The Nebraska law encourages heterosexuals to bear and raise children in committed marriage relationships. New York's High Court used that rationale in ruling last week that the state constitution does not require legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples. The Nebraska decision does not bode well for other federal challenges to existing marriage laws, certainly not cases originating in Middle America. Equality advocates are now considering their options. Those include an appeal to the full bench of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, or a petition to the U.S. Supreme Court.
A Connecticut Superior Court judge ruled this week that because the state's civil unions law provides the same protections and rights for gay and lesbian couples as marriage, the difference in name alone is not enough to cause legal harm under the state's constitution. Eight same-gender couples have sued the state, charging that civil unions are inferior to marriage and therefore confer separate but equal status. But Judge Patty Jenkins Pittman ruled that the Connecticut Constitution requires that there be equal protection and due process of law, not that there be equivalent nomenclature for such protection and process. She further wrote that the court rejects the argument that the rhetorical separation of marriage versus civil union is enough to invoke an equal protection or due process analysis. But Ben Klein, a senior attorney with Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, which represents the couples, challenged that reasoning. He told reporters that there aren't very many married people who would trade their marriage for a civil union. Ultimately, Klein predicted, the case will reach the Connecticut Supreme Court. This is just the first step in what we knew would be a long journey, he said.
Massachusetts lawmakers ended debate on 20 different constitutional amendments this week without confronting the most volatile of them on their agenda, a proposal to ban same-gender marriage in the only U.S. state where it's legal. The amendment would have to win the support of 50 of the 200 lawmakers during this and the 2007-2008 legislative session before it could be put to the voters. The move to recess the state's special constitutional convention until November 9th delays a decision on the politically charged issue until after the upcoming general election. Referring to legislative debates on the proposed ban since it was first introduced in 2002, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's Matt Foreman lamented that the state's queer families have had to endure 16 yes or no votes about the validity of their relationships. This playing with people's lives to advance narrow political and partisan interests is beyond cruel. The amendment, which supporters hope to place on the 2008 ballot, would ban future same-gender marriages in Massachusetts. The state Supreme Judicial Court rejected a legal challenge this week to the constitutional validity of the proposal itself. But the court also said that if the ban is ultimately approved, the state would have to continue to recognize the more than 8,000 lesbian and gay couples who've married there since they became legal in May 2004.
And the Tennessee Supreme Court ruled late this week that the American Civil Liberties Union did not have standing to file a lawsuit against that state's proposal to ban legal recognition of same-gender couples. The ACLU had charged that the state failed to meet its own notification requirements for the November ballot measure, arguing that a six-week delay had hampered opponents' ability to mobilize against the amendment. The justices also concluded that widespread media coverage of the issue, well before the notification was formally issued, muted that argument. Tennessee already has a law banning same-gender marriage, but lawmakers who supported the proposed amendment said they wanted a constitutional restriction in case the existing law is overturned. 45 U.S. states have specifically outlawed same-gender marriage through statutes or constitutional amendments. Voters in six more are poised to vote on constitutional amendments in November, while similar proposals in two other states may also qualify.
Marking the first anniversary of Spain's becoming one of only four nations where gay and lesbian couples have access to traditional marriage, some 1.5 million people turned out for the LGBT Pride Parade in Madrid on July 1st. Duplicating the banners a few weeks earlier in Valencia, the theme of the Madrid March was also for diversity, all families matter. An apparent jab at last year's Families Do Matter campaign against same-gender marriage by the country's right-wing Family Forum. About 40,000 people also celebrated Pride in Barcelona. Police said the marchers themselves numbered about 3,500.
Two Spanish gay couples very publicly tied the knot this week in the Valencia town hall. Elsewhere in the city, Pope Benedict XVI was saying Mass before more than a million people to conclude his two-day visit to predominantly Catholic Spain. During the service, he once again condemned gays and lesbians and said limiting marriage to one man and one woman is a great good for all humanity. Admitting that it may not please the Pope, the timing of the weddings was chosen specifically to criticize the Roman Catholic Church's stance on sexual morality, according to the activist group Lambda, and to promote the diversity of the family.
Meanwhile, Spain's first gay divorce battle is underway, according to a report in the El Mundo newspaper. One man seeks to keep the house and the dogs and grant his husband pet visitation rights. The two men were not identified.
But two gay Air Force privates based in the Spanish city of Seville plan to legally wed in September, taking the country's new same-gender marriage law to the ranks of the military for what is believed to be the first time there. Their union may not be well received in the armed forces, but the two men, both of whom are named Alberto, say they don't care. Their last names were not released. Spain's defense ministry acknowledged that it was aware of the wedding plans through news reports, but said only that it was a personal matter and that the men have every right to wed under the marriage equality law that went into effect in the country on January 1st.
The wedding of two Nova Scotia Mounties held at a downtown hotel in Yarmouth on June 30th marked Canada's first marriage of two male Mounties. Jason Tree and David Connors, wearing the Mounties' trademark scarlet tunics, recited their own vows during a private ceremony before a justice of the peace and about 100 guests.
And finally, opponents of Arizona's proposed constitutional ban on legal recognition of same-gender couples sued this week to keep it off the November 7th ballot, charging that the measure violates the U.S. state's single-subject rule for voter initiatives. Georgia's Supreme Court rejected a similar challenge last week to an amendment passed by that state's voters in 2004. The plaintiffs in the Arizona lawsuit, however, are five heterosexual couples who argue that some voters may want to ban marriage but not other forms of legal recognition for same-gender couples. They're mostly senior citizens who believe that the initiative is written so broadly that it would strip them of the domestic partner recognition they enjoy in cities such as Phoenix, Tucson, and Tempe, as well as in Pima County. Protect Marriage Arizona turned in almost 308,000 signatures last week to qualify the measure for the ballot, far more than the 184,000 valid signatures required. Elections officials are expected to finish the verification process in about 2 weeks. A court ruling on the legal challenge will have to be made within 6 weeks because Arizona requires a lawsuit to be decided before ballots are printed. One of the plaintiff pairs, 59-year-old Caitlin Meadows and her partner, 68-year-old Albert Lannon, were the 10th couple to sign Tucson's domestic partner registry. According to a story in the Tucson Citizen, they decided to do that after learning that Meadows could lose her Social Security benefits if the two were to get married. "We are a late-in-life, tax-paying couple who has played by the rules all our lives," she told the Citizen, "but the rules have not protected us." Welcome to our world, Miss Meadows.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 15, 2006. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Greg Chapman.
And we're here with Carol Wyatt. And Wyatt's going to, you know what, she's just going to rant a little bit. We were talking a moment ago, well, what should we talk about? And, of course, my pet peeve is the Republican state platform. Yes, they're declaring a new hunting season. Yes, they are.
Well, tell
and it's on us.
And you don't need permits.
Well, you don't need permits.
And this would be new in what way?
Well, they would rather make it legal to hunt us. I guess they'd have to pay stamps, you know, that sort of thing, you know, like we do for ducks or
sure.
Or whatever.
Well, Dick Cheney was never limited by that theory anyway. But tell us more about the latest travesty.
Oh, God.
I feel like I'm interviewing you.
Well,
welcome to the show.
I'll tell you what to do. I don't like to just paraphrase. I'll just read
it.
Just read it. And it states, this is from the Republican State Party platform, and it says, "We oppose any criminal or civil penalties against those who oppose homosexuality out of faith, conviction, or belief in traditional values."
Okay, so does that mean if I don't like it because you're queer and I kill you, that I can't be subject to punishment because of my faith?
If I read that correctly, that's what it does say.
Yeah, that pretty much sucks.
Yeah, it really does. And as the family of the survivor, I can't sue you either.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, that sounds extreme, but there's actually been a movement among the medical profession to allow doctors and nurses to withhold care to people who are gay, lesbian, or transgendered for the same reason for abortions. There's been a movement there for people to not be forced to provide care to a woman having an abortion. Well, they've extended that to people in the GLBT community.
Well, that's even going beyond just the doctors and nurses. It's of course, going out to the pharmacists who claim they don't want to dispense the morning after pill. I recently read a case of an ambulance driver who refused to carry a woman because she believed that she was being transported for an abortion. Now, that story's a little weird because why would you need an ambulance for an abortion? But this is a story that's getting worse and worse. And where do you draw the line? I mean, yes, you honor their beliefs, but by God, if you sign up for a certain profession, that profession has professional responsibilities, right?
Well, if I remember correctly, and I, again, paraphrasing the Hippocratic Oath, they should do no harm.
Right.
And withholding medical care is doing harm to somebody.
Yep. And I mean, if you're going through pharmacy school and you know that you're not going to be able to dispense certain drugs based on your religion, I think maybe you ought to find a new career. I'm just saying.
And actually, I could have something that I could rant on, and I don't know what your take on this would be. But there was
go
a letter.
Ahead. I bet y'all have an opinion.
There was a so they printed a letter in the Chronicle, and it was from, you know, basically said that although Democratic when they stopped supporting gay rights and abortion.
Yeah.
That's basically all it said. And then I saw a show on the History Channel a couple of nights ago that was, you know, talking about the Old Testament and Joshua and Judges and all that, and how it actually says in the Bible for the Jews to go out and kill every man, woman, and child, the young and the old, pregnant women, babies, whatever, when they were entering into the Holy Land to claim it. And I thought, okay, now here's God blessing basically a campaign of extermination.
That must be what Cheney's been reading.
Yeah, right. The Old Testament's pretty mean.
But it just goes to show you that that, you know, people get on their soapbox about things like abortion and pro-life and the sanctity of life, and then they'll turn around on the next day and defend the Bible that talks about God, you know, basically blessing the extermination of an entire people.
Well, I had two thoughts on that letter, and basically the letter said, you won't get our vote, Democrats, until you abandon your position on abortion and gay rights. And my first thought was, yeah, that's exactly the position y'all were taking during the civil rights struggle in the 60s that you didn't think those were worthy of fighting for either.
Well,
I think they've been on the wrong side of so many issues, and they're on the wrong side of this one either. And basically, frankly, I don't want them. I don't think we're ever going to convert them. I don't want them. We just need to go out and get everybody else to come to their senses.
Well, I think fairness, you know, the basic tenet of most Americans is to be fair, to play fair. Those kind of positions just isn't playing fair.
No,
I mean, they're the same people that were saying, well, you know, blacks and whites shouldn't marry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Ooh, and it says so in the Bible.
Well, not that I claim to be a biblical scholar, although I was forced to
go ahead and claim you are.
I was forced to go to Sunday school for many years. Friends, and you are my friends, draw near the radio and let me share with you a story. Most of the biblical admonitions against homosexuality come out of a book in the Old Testament called Leviticus.
Right.
Jesus never said a word about being gay. And Leviticus also says things like, there's this hilarious letter that somebody wrote back to one of the columnists about who was slamming homosexuality, and they said, you know, I agree that we ought to follow all of the biblical teachings, but I need a little help. For example, it says we shouldn't associate with women who are menstruating. Can we say that on the radio? But
you
I
just did.
Yeah, but I can't tell who is, and when I ask, people get mad. What should I do? You know, it says that I'm supposed to, I don't know, do something with ox blood for people who are impure, but it smells really bad and people get upset. So what do I do? You know, it's just ridiculous.
Just remember, women should not wear pants.
That's true.
That's true.
I think as we look back on history, that really was the start of the decline. America just started to go to H-E double hockey sticks after that.
I don't think men are supposed to shave either, actually. There's a lot of rules on that.
Yeah.
And of course, there's lots of rules on what you can eat and when you can eat it. And
you know, if I believed in God, I just don't, I can't imagine believing in a God who would care what you ate or care what you wore on your head. Wouldn't he care about bigger issues?
Well, that's all old Jewish religious law, which actually even most Jews don't keep. And certainly I've never met anyone in the Christian community who actually keeps old Jewish law.
Sure.
And
most of them don't even know it.
Yeah, most of them don't even know it.
The 10 suggestions is about all they know about.
They know the one or two verses about that talk about homosexuality, and that's about it. That's their some knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget about those two places in Deuteronomy about transgenders.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They conveniently forget all the ones about divorce.
Sure. You know, if they really wanted to protect the sanctity of marriage, divorce would be the first thing you'd think they'd go after. But
there's too many people, too many voters.
That are divorced.
Well, I think those stones are getting a little bit close to home when you start throwing those.
Mm. Yes, they live in glass houses.
Glass houses?
Out on the West End.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to to limit somebody else's rights. It's not any fun when you have to do it to yourself.
Sure. That's right. What special's going on with you these days? What have you been writing about?
Oh, my God. You know, since Pride's gotten over with, apparently it's just a painful reminder of how boring my life is when Pride isn't going on. It sucks up a lot of time. But it was a fabulous success, and a lot of people put in a lot of hard work, and so that was fun. So I'm happy to report that I'm finally rehydrated after spending the entire day out in that sun.
I was in the shade in one of the covered booth areas, but I was a wilted flower after that was
over. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. My starch was gone. And for those of you who know me, starch is pretty much my fashion theme. And, and when the starch goes, I really have nothing left to offer.
Oh.
So it wasn't pretty.
I had my hair up and it was wilted.
Oh. Well, we'll have to trade fashion tips some other time.
Well, I used to have short hair, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Long time ago.
Yeah, I used to have long hair. I got over that. So who knew that this was going to be the fashion hour?
Yeah.
The gay fashion hour. Say, that's worthy of airtime.
That's right. Well, what's going on in the Middle East?
Oh, man, what a mess. I was driving over here tonight, and I think, you know, Deborah's going to probably ask me about that, because usually I don't prepare. Deborah just asks me stuff, and I go. And speaking of that, here she is.
Well, we're going to have Ellie join us, because Ellie is Lebanese.
Oh, tell us about your country and what's going on.
Good evening. Well, in the queer content.
The queer...
Actually, we weren't talking about the queer context. There's a big old mess going on over there.
What part of Lebanon are you from?
Well, I was born here, but my parents and all my family are from the mountain regions just outside Beirut, and it's pretty much just like living out in the suburbs in Houston, except for it's living in the beautiful mountains.
Mm. Expect some of the things blowing up now.
Yeah, it's tragic. Honestly, they just finished rebuilding the downtown Beirut after the Civil War, which ran on and off.
Yeah.
Since the 60s.
That was their civil war, not ours.
Yeah, the Lebanese civil war ran from the late 60s on and off until 1992. And to be honest, you know, this is pretty much a repeat of the 70s where
blown up all the infrastructure. You know, the good news is, though, that Halliburton has been released from its exclusive contract with the government, so now they'll have time to rebuild Lebanon.
Oh, yes.
I'm just saying, I'm always a glass half full kind of a gal.
Actually, not this time. Last time, it was Rafik Hariri's group who did most of the rebuilding, and as you know, he was the former prime minister.
He was assassinated,
He was assassinated by Syria, if I remember.
Yeah, and he actually profited immensely from the whole thing during his tenure as prime minister, and you know, now that he's dead and his son's in charge, you know, be honest, the country is in debt. It is one of the most indebted countries in the world by
GNP.
Thank you. And
very nice.
Be honest, I don't know if they. No one knows what's happening right now. It's just chaos. People are afraid Syria's going to invade again.
Do you have a lot of anger at Hezbollah or Israel, or do you just kind of throw up your hands and?
Well, at this point, I know my folks are really upset with Israel because, you know, this is going to be very politically incorrect for me to say, but it's almost a national pastime to blame Israel for everything in the Middle East, especially if you're Arab, Christian, or Muslim.
It does seem to be a disproportionate response to the kidnapping of a couple of soldiers.
But, of course, it's more than that. There were, I think, 8 of them killed, and there's been a lot of rocket attacks. So it wasn't an isolated incident.
Yeah, but they kidnapped a couple of soldiers, then Israel did a very fairly large-scale attack, and then the rest of it happened.
No, they killed the soldiers up front along with the kidnapping.
Okay. Well, apparently I don't know the right story, so I should shut up.
Well, the stories are mixed, and right now it's pretty much 8 are killed, 2 are kidnapped, and but the problem is people are already talking about I think it's Feinstein of California who is saying that the United States or Israel has full right to go into Lebanon and clear out the southern half. And what they're talking about is just whole scale. If you're talking about depopulation, this is only Feinstein. This is not official. It's depopulation. That's what they're talking about. But no one knows what the plan is yet.
Yeah.
Really.
You know, no matter where you stand on those issues, the disturbing things to me are clearly the United States has lost its moral grounding and power to take any leadership role here. Nobody's looking to the United States to
do
it.
We have spent all our capital, yeah, that's for sure.
We're definitely definite deficit spending here. And I had another point, and I just lost it. So
I mean, would you like us to look around the room
could
and
you?
See if you're still here?
I think I heard
okay.
it drop on the floor.
Oh, okay.
But oh, I know what it was. That, you know, Dick Cheney's whole premise for invading Iraq, this vision that we could create this peaceful oasis in the Middle East that would serve as a role model and would inspire other countries to embrace democracy. I would say
it has been inspirational.
Sure.
And now it's repeating in Lebanon.
Although not in the way we might have hoped.
Right.
Yeah.
Like in Iran.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
To be honest, though, I don't see Lebanon as a repeat of Iraq. I mean, it's basically repeating itself from the 70s.
It's just more violence and you know, chaos.
Well, it hasn't broken down into an eight-sided civil war yet. It's basically Israel bombing the place for looking for Hezbollah, and to be honest, you know, they've probably left.
Well, apparently they're not trying hard enough.
Well, one thing about it, unfortunately, we're not going to solve it here tonight.
Darn.
Carol Wyatt, thank you very much for coming in. And we'll think of something else to talk about next time if you want to.
Well, we ran the gamut, gave politics right into the Middle East.
Absolutely. And this is
Jennifer. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. This is Jennifer Ney in Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and the Queer Voices crew.
Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
This is J.D., and that was Rachel Sage with Right OK from her brand new album, The Blistering Sun. Hey.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Queer Voices, of course. This is Jack Falinski, and with us is Jeff Reed, who is with the Houston Equal Rights Alliance, and he's going to be talking about a few things, including the Family Marriage Amendment scheduled for vote tomorrow at the U.S. House of Representatives. Well, first of all, Jeff, what is Houston ERA?
So the Houston Equal Rights Alliance is a nonprofit organization, and we also have we have a C4, and we now have a PAC, so we are moving out a little bit into also doing some issue advocacy, but our main purpose is to do education among the community and outside of the community on GLBT issues and equality and fairness issues, and to particularly to bring other organizations together outside of the community and inside of the community so we can all work together and try to educate the broader public about our issues.
Okay. And we have this vote coming tomorrow. The Senate, well, tell me where we stand on it.
So this is the Federal Marriage Amendment. Everyone has been talking about this for years and years. You'll remember the last time it came up was the last election year.
How coincidental.
This is actually not coincidental, of course. This is a really big fundraising, get-out-the-vote tool for many people on the right, and so it comes up because it is important for them to have it come up so their people can see them sort of doing something, but in reality everyone knows that it'll never pass. It actually failed in the Senate already. So what's happening in the House right now, if you'll remember your civics class, a constitutional amendment has to pass in the House and the Senate before
two-thirds.
Yes, two-thirds in the House and the Senate before it goes to a broader vote.
So even if it passes tomorrow, it's pretty meaningless since the Senate's already said no.
Exactly. If it passes tomorrow, it means absolutely nothing to anyone except for a fundraiser for some Republican candidate in maybe a swing district somewhere.
Sounds like a big use of productive time.
And, you know, it's funny, there's a couple other votes that this Congress has decided to hold. There's a flag-burning amendment vote that already went down, shockingly, actually, by only one vote, which is a little disappointing. But, you know, these things are designed to try to make the electoral landscape more advantageous to people who are against GLBT issues. And, you know, because they're the people who have the levers of power right now, they're going to do what they feel like works for them.
So they're wasting all this time, yet there's already been laws passed in many of the states.
Yes, and in fact, we saw recent rulings in New York, and there was a ruling in Alabama, and there was a ruling in, Georgia, where in all three cases, the Supreme Court said the state constitutional amendments, of course, we have one here in Texas that passed last time, and you know, the states, of course, are always free to amend their constitutions, but the concern, and now playing the devil's advocate, the concern of somebody who is opposing gay marriage is that the federal clauses that require states to recognize the laws and contractual relationships that are bound
by
other bind
states.
People in other states, yes.
In other words, if you got married in Massachusetts, would it be binding in Texas?
Exactly. Now, there is actually a Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which specifically says that that would not be the case. However, you know, you can drum up more votes by scaring people and saying, well, activist liberal judges could overturn that. But, you know, realistically, at the end of the day, nobody expects that this thing is going to do anything except for work as a get-out-the-vote tool for people on the right. However, the good thing about it is we are talking about marriage, and I think a lot of people forget this because we've come very far very fast, and if you look back just a few years, nobody was talking about marriage. Now, does it hurt when people say, yes, you know, gay people are fundamentally flawed? Yeah, okay, that does hurt, but the important thing is people are hearing the word gay marriage, they're thinking about gay marriage, and there are a lot of people in the middle who maybe don't care so much about it, and they're saying, well, gee, well, you know, what's the big deal about this? And so in the long run, I think it's good for us that these things are being talked about. In the short run, it may may cause us some electoral pain.
Well, in reality, in the long run, this is an issue that's going to be won because the younger generation doesn't have a problem with gay marriage.
Yes, exactly. If you look at the polling, far and away, people who are in the sort of youngest generation, I would say people in the 18 to 30 whatever demographic that TV likes to talk about so much, these are the young voters. Unfortunately, they don't vote.
They're right.
But they are the young people who, let's say, could vote if they chose to. They overwhelmingly approve of equality legislation. They overwhelmingly feel like GLBT issues are part of the civil rights movement, and they don't see any problem with any of the sorts of things that will give GLBT people the same protections that straight couples have. It's the older generations who are sort of steeped in the past, who don't realize and really understand our issues so well that we have problems with it. The polls, unfortunately, they vote more often than younger people. But the good news is there's organizations like the Houston Equal Rights Alliance and our partners like Equality Texas and the GLBT Political Caucus here in Houston who work to educate voters of all stripes to try to get people to understand our issues better, and so then they can vote in a more informed way on our issues. And when they do vote in a more informed way, it really helps us.
Probably really has helped that many people in the community now come out so much earlier. And, you know, many actually come out in high school.
Oh, yeah. You know, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus that I'm also involved in, you know, we have an intern who is out in high school. And to me, even as young as I am, that is unimaginable. And so, you know, the idea that people feel comfortable to come out in high school in a place like Texas, which is not always the most friendly place, is really good news. And furthermore, coming out is the best thing that anybody can do individually, because polls and studies have shown time and again that people who know someone who is gay, people who are related to someone who is gay, or people who work with someone who is gay are far less likely to support legislation that hurts the gay community, because we aren't some abstract concept that seems frightening and threatening. We're actual real people with faces, lives, and voices that they would then have to really, in their heart, understand that they were hurting these people they knew, and they're just not willing to do that. So as hard as it is, you know, and coming out, everyone knows this, it's a continual process. You're always coming out to new people because you're always meeting new people, but it's the most important political thing that any gay person can do.
You mentioned Equality Texas. Is that your group or a group you're
working
with?
No. So Equality Texas is one of our alliance partners, and we've done a lot with them. The Houston Equal Rights Alliance grew out of a partnership between Equality Texas, which was then LGRL, and the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. And, you know, we are partnering with them on this. You can go to their website. It's equalitytexas.org, and they have all the information you need about contacting the legislators who need to be contacted on the federal marriage amendment. And I don't want to discourage people from doing that, even though this is really kind of a ridiculous exercise in electoral politics and it doesn't have very much to do with policy. But if people see outrage and people see their constituents complaining, they won't do this again and again and again. So I really encourage people to go to equalitytexas.org and use the tools there to talk to their legislators and, you know, tell them how they feel about the federal marriage amendment and other issues.
Last week there was a film that you all co-sponsored, and can you talk a little bit about that?
So the film we co-sponsored, it was an event with the People for the American Way and Equality Texas and some others, and this was on a ballot initiative that was in Cincinnati in Ohio in 2004. This was the only pro-gay ballot initiative that passed. This is actually really the only real success that the gay community had in that year. As many as you may know, we were hurt pretty strongly. Really, it was just brutal with all of the marriage amendment stuff that was on ballots in various states. I believe there were 13, and we lost all 13. And this was to repeal it can be a little confusing because it was repealing a citywide ordinance which was designed to keep the city from providing any protections to GLBT people. And we won in Ohio on this, and it was done through a lot of really on-the-ground work, a lot of help with people like the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, who are very good at this. And it's all about individual conversations, going door to door, block walking, doing the uncomfortable work of walking up to a stranger, knocking on their, you know, talking to them, knocking on their door, talking to them, saying, hey, you know, what do you think about these issues, trying to identify people who are with us, trying to identify people who are against us, and trying to have conversations with people who are kind of in the middle so they understand better what our issues are. And this is actually the model that the Houston Equal Rights Alliance follows. This is what we do, and we were very pleased to co-sponsor it. And there was a very nice panel with Anise Parker and Jerry Simino, the National Director of Interfaith Outreach for the People for the American Way, and then our president, Tammy Wallace.
Well, and it was really interesting that the roundtable after that was good. But Cincinnati was known for the Maple Thorpe exhibit. Where,
yes.
And in fact, Cincinnati, their airport's even in another state. and I understand that most of the dirty bookstores have been zoned out of Cincinnati, so they're all in Kentucky, which is just across the river from them. But the fact that they actually organized to work and organize and talk to, like, religious leaders, black leaders, and they've basically got them all to support non-discrimination.
Yeah, and this is very, very important. This is something, if people listening have one take-home message, I would like it to be, they need to be out, they need to be authentic in their life, and they need to get involved in the process. But if there's a second message they get out of it, it's that we need to really get people who are not in our community part of our battle. Because if you do the math, if you look at the statistics, maybe 10%, maybe 20% at the most of the population identify as GLBT. Well, that is not going to win you any election. 20% of the vote will never
win you. Well, and also the fact that a lot of our people don't vote.
And a lot of our people don't vote. So we need the help of others. In particular, we need the help of the African American community, the Latino community, because our issues are the same issues. These are issues of fairness. These are issues of discrimination. Claretta Scott King said it, and Cornel West has said it, that the civil rights struggle has given birth to, and really our struggle has grown out of, the civil rights struggle. We are an extension of what Martin Luther King started. And that's one of the reasons I personally do this, because I feel like this is the civil rights struggle of our era. And if we can get more and more people to understand that, then I think that bodes well for us, because they'll understand this isn't about special rights. This isn't about destroying marriage. This isn't about, redefining anything. This is just about trying to be fair to everybody and give everybody a chance to participate fully in their lives as, productive citizens in committed relationships and outside of relationships.
And it's certainly a dangerous message if you start saying that you can limit, right. It's like,
yeah.
Where do you stop?
Exactly.
If civil rights is not a sacred cow, then anybody could be affected. If the majority feel strongly enough.
Yeah, and, who's to say? I mean, one of the lessons of this is that people can sort of think about, how safe are what we consider to be the rights that we have won? How safe is voting for African Americans? Well, you look at the last couple of elections, and the Voting Rights Act, they were going to re-endorse it in Congress, and they actually didn't. And so you have to think, are these things set in amber once we win them, or are these things that are part of a continual struggle where it's always about going to people and saying, hi, I might be different than you, but I'm not that different, and we're all the same, and we all should respect each other. And so, it is all about making sure that we keep the gains that we have, and we try to continue to allow more and more people to be part of our community. And I want to say one thing in particular, the GLBT, we have to really, it's very important to put the T in GLBT, because as the gay community in general, we've served as sort of the canaries, in the mine. Like, when things start to go badly, when discrimination starts to happen, we're kind of at the forefront. Well, the T's are really even more out on the edge of this. They're the people who, if you remember the Transgender Day of Remembrance every year in November, people are being killed in the street for being transgender. And that doesn't happen nearly as much to people who just identify as gay or lesbian or bisexual. And thankfully, it doesn't happen as much because of race relations. But, we have to authentically understand and invest in every community and understand that they're all part of the same struggle and bring everyone along with us. Otherwise, the gains that we're winning are not real gains.
So how can people get involved in Houston Equal Rights Alliance.
Well, we encourage people specifically for this federal marriage amendment to go to the Equality Texas website. That's equalitytexas.org, and they can find the tools they need to talk to legislators about the federal marriage amendment. Our beloved field director, Emily Langdon, is leaving us. She's going to law school, and so we're having a fundraiser slash going away party for her, and that's a week from Wednesday at Meteor at 7 p.m. We're calling it Hair Off for Hera, and we have some people who are going to shave their heads if we raise enough money, including such luminaries as the community's favorite coiffed lawyer, Jerry Simino. So I encourage everyone to come and pay as much money, because I really want to see Jerry bald. I know he's going to love to hear that. But yeah, so please come, you know, bring some cash, bring your checkbooks, bring, you know, your sense of fun, and come out on a week from Wednesday to Meteor and, you know, give Emily a nice big send-off, and hopefully we can raise money. And there we'll give you some more information about volunteering and getting involved further.
And you can always go to the website, HoustonERA.org, for more information. Jeff Reed is on the board of the Houston Equal Rights Alliance. And as I said, you can get more information, or you can call 713-522-HERA, or HoustonERA.org. You're listening to Queer Voices.
I know it's hard to understand the way that I think. I cannot give you perfect love, no. That's just the way that I think. It's just the way that I think. Keep saying that you love me anyways, and that you're willing to be there. Can't be perfect, no, not every day. I'm really trying for your sake. I'm really trying for your sake. Who I should be. Keep giving me another chance. I can't keep hurting you. It's killing me inside. But you won't let me walk away.
Okay. And this is JD. That was Alan Hanks. You can find out more about him at alanhanks.com. He's a local artist. That's the title track from his brand new and his debut album called Not Like Mine.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Queer Voices.
Queer Voices. Voices. Voices.
This is Queer Voices.
July 19th marks the anniversary of the public hangings of gay Iranian teenagers Mahmoud Askari and Ayaz Marhani. As demonstrations memorialize their executions in cities around the world, queer activists who slipped out of Tehran's grip are coming out with their stories of oppression and their hopes for empowerment. Heather Kitching brought one such activist to the microphones of her Queer FM program in Vancouver, B.C.
We are joined by Arshem Parsi, who has recently arrived in Canada from Iran. And he is the spokesperson for the Persian Gay and Lesbian Organization. Arshem, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Tell me, first of all, what your life was like in Iran. What city are you from?
I came from Shiraz. Is the south city of Iran and is the cultural capital city of Iran. And I born in Shiraz and I grew up in Shiraz. And 1 year ago, in 4th of March 2005, I escaped from Iran to Turkey. And in Turkey, I introduced myself to UNHCR, United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. And after 2 months, I recognized it as a refugee, and Canadian Embassy approved my case, and I came to Canada in 10th of May, and I'm very happy that I can live in a freedom country.
So how do gay people come to understand that they are gay? Is there media coverage of homosexuality? Is there any literature? How did you come to know that you were gay?
When I was about 10 years old, I understood that I am different from others, my friends. I didn't have any friends and in any special fantasy in my in girls, and I loved the boys and my friends, and the most persons in Iran understand when I was a child, understand they are different from others. But I recognized my friends in when I was 18. And I believe my stance, I believe that I'm a gay, and before that, I think that I am wrong and I do a wrong thing. But after I'm in 18 and I have a contact with internet and I find many friends in all around the world, I understood that I'm not alone in this world with this same, and many people say me, and I'm a normal, and I study, and I'm searching the internet and books, and I believe myself. And usually in Iran, the people understand and believe themselves about 16 or 18.
Hmm. Are there ways in Iran for gay people to meet each other?
Yes, but it is very difficult. Before that, I find the internet way, because internet in Iran is very important, because it is just only device for introduce others and have a contact, because our television and radio and broadcasting in Iran is filtered by Islamic Republic of Iran, and we have not any special programs about the sexuality and others, and internet is the best way. But unfortunately, the Islamic Republic of Iran filters the website and our website and all of the websites that have any special articles about sex and sexuality is filtered, and LGBT people find each other on the net and maybe in the private gathering parties, and some people can find each other in the some parks in cities. I can explain, when you saw somebody and you think maybe he's a gay, you can look at him and maybe you can make a relationship with him and talk to him or her, and you find he's or she is a gay or lesbian, and you can make a relationship and continue your friendship. But it's very hard, and internet is not safe place for find the people. We had many entrapped, and some police going to the on the net and find the people and entrap and catch the gay or lesbians or transgender on the net and the lashed and sentenced to death.
How widespread is that, and what do they do?
Iranian law, Islamic law, is basically from Islam and Quran, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Islam is don't accept homosexuality and transgender. And if you are a gay or lesbian in Iran, that means it's wrong and against the Islam, because Islam says this is a forbidden. And if you are a gay and you have any gay or lesbian friendship, you are against in the Islam and you should sentence to death. And the police and the Islamic people and Islamic culture is very homophobic to the gay and lesbian people. For example, we have a gay gathering party in Shiraz, and the police attend to this party, and all of these people were sent to the court, and they lashed about 100 times.
Wow.
Yeah. And I believe that we are a family. All of the homosexuals in all of the around the world is a family, and we should support each other, because if we don't support each other, who can support us?
Mm-hmm. Well, we should tell people too that your website is www.pglo.net.
I have about more than 100 emails each day, and most of them is a foreign, and they are not Iranian. And I have many friends in the Western and also in the Europe that they would like support Iranian brothers and sisters and Iranian LGBT brothers and sisters, but they don't know how they can help. And in my opinion, we can help each other by cultural and by in the human rights cases.
Mm-hmm.
This is very important. If the Western countries help to PGLO or Iranian LGBT brothers and sisters, it is a cultural and human rights help and support. It is not political, because we live in the social groups, not in the political groups.
Mm-hmm.
We have a monthly magazine, which name is Cherok, and a weekly radio on the net, which name is Rahat Ethnic Freedom. And we send this file by email to our members, mm-hmm. because they couldn't download these magazines and radio on the net in Iran.
Is your long-term goal to help to change attitudes inside Iran, or are you working to help gay people in Iran flee to other countries?
In my opinion, it is a general. We cannot choose just one item, and we are going to, most of our activities is cultural activities, not political, because we believe that we have a problem in culture. If Islamic regime is changed, but we have problems with the peoples too. We should learn them and teach them what means homosexuality. And I'm sure that the most of Iranians in Iran don't know different of the homosexuality and sodomy.
Mm-hmm.
And we should teach to them that sodomy and homosexuality is different. And if they have information, they can accept us. But if they don't have any information, they are homophobic.
Mm-hmm. Arshem, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Yeah, no, I'm welcome. Excuse me, and I'm sorry because my English is not very good, and I have some problems in my English because I never passed any English courses. And just I learned English just by practice, and always say to my foreign people, if I have any problem, please teach me, because I should learn English very well. And if you let me, I say our email address, mm-hmm. pglo@pglo.net.
All
right. Our the Republic Affairs, and you can send your mail to pglo@pglo.net. Thank you for your support, and have a good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That was This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching in Vancouver, B.C., talking by phone with Arsham Parsi of the Persian Gay and Lesbian Organization. Again, their website is at www.pglo.net. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Sherry Lund, Rex Walker, Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Iran Sicurel, and Heather Kitching contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can now listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. Click on the features link on their front page. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT history, music, and culture CD thank you gifts. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038 USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 5UV Adelaide, South Australia, KUMD Duluth, Minnesota, WBCR Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
Could be. be man enough, man enough to tell me how you feel. I could stop questioning, questioning if what we have is real. No, yeah, yeah. If you could be man enough, man enough to tell me how you feel. If you could be man enough to tell me how you feel. I could stop questioning, questioning if what we have is real, yeah. If you could be man enough to tell me how you feel, I wouldn't cry.
Is Queer Voices.
Done without.
Okay, JD, we heard us some singing there.
Yes, this is JD. This is that was a queer music triple play, all new music. Started off with a brand new CD. I just got it in the mail today by an artist just going by the name Charlie. You can find him on the web at www.soulfulboy.com. And he spells boy B-O-I, so you know he's young. And I followed that with a local artist again, Alan Hanks, who we heard a little bit earlier from his album, Not Like Mine. And at the end of that set, Rachel Sage, an artist I've liked for years. She's very prolific. She has like 9 or 10 CDs now. And, oh, gee, I'm going to remind you all to watch, to listen to Queer Music Heritage next week, the second part, where I will cover the winners of the Out Music Awards that were held in New York last month. You'll hear bits of the music of all the winners and some extras and some surprises. You can also see and hear that on my site, queermusicheritage.com. And I say see because I show graphics of all the albums, all the artists, and just to make it a, more of a visual experience.
This is Queer Voices.
Oh, that was nice. That was some good music. Is that boy, B-O-I, was that a real boy or was that a T?
Boy. Real boy.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Because sometimes the transgender female
yeah,
to male.
Yeah, tell me about that. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yes. Well, female to male transgender young ones especially tend to use boy spelled B-O-I.
That's right. You're
gosh,
absolutely right.
You know, I just got over spelling woman, W-O-M-Y-N. Now we're new ways of spelling.
Yeah. So what's going on in the community?
Well, the gay games, you know, they took off this weekend for Chicago and Team Houston. You know, we sent them off last weekend.
Right,
and so go Team Houston. Good luck to all the athletes
there.
Yeah,
I was reading where all of the right-wing Christians are going to be up there to protest the games.
Well, you know, they got to have something to do.
Well,
and Jack, are we back to, we don't have anything to do because Pride's over with?
It's post-Pride depression. No, there's plenty of things. I do in the community, and we've got elections coming up in November, so those campaigns are starting to get ready to kick off and work. And HERA, of course, is you know, going to continue doing their voter IDs, especially in the Martha Wong district.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which for Alan Cohen to work for the Houston Gay Lesbian bisexual transgender political caucus PAC endorsed candidate Ellen Cohen.
Right. And, well, actually in Pride, though, we're doing a bunch of wrap-up. You know, the committees are having meetings to sort of wrap up and talk about what worked, what didn't work type of thing.
Y'all doing any planning for next year already? Or y'all
a few months away from that? But we're sort of like, okay, we'll take all the notes and try to figure out what worked, what didn't work, and then we'll incorporate them as we move forward.
And then
okay.
You also need people to get involved. Maybe they volunteered this year and would like to step up to a new position. Or
speaking of volunteers, though, HERA went out and collected about 2,600 names, and they needed to be added to the database. So if you're interested in helping that out, you can contact me, jack@queervoices.org, and we'll get you. Usually we do that on Thursday evenings and Saturdays.
And one other thing, I wanted to say that Brenda Thomas, activist in the transgender community especially, but in the GLBT community, worked for the city in the health department, promoting and helping the city understand the GLBT issues within city government. She's ill, and she's been in the Omega House, in the hospice, and we're having a having a reception for her tomorrow between 3 and 6 over at Bering Omega. That's the building right behind Bering Methodist Church there on Hawthorne, and try to come out and spend a few moments. There'll be refreshments in the all, and just to honor her, if and this goes from her, she said, anyone who's interested in donating anything, please do so to the Houston Transgender Unity Committee, the scholarship fund. That's you can reach them through you can go through at info@HoustonTransgenderUnity.org, or you can call Melanie at 281-347-6878, and it's a good cause. I mean, you know, it's a educational scholarship fund for kids who just can't get other scholarships in the transgender community.
And you can find out more about the Unity Committee by going to HoustonTransgenderUnity.org. The Melody Rudd, a wonderful person, and that group has just been doing so much and has really evolved over the years, and it would be a lovely way to honor Brenda and her activism. So if you're a friend of hers or a part of the community and would like to honor her, this is the time to do it, because she won't be with us much longer.
That's right. Through her efforts, the Unity Committee, the Houston Transgender Unity Committee, got her 501c3. She worked very hard for that, setting up the Melanie Rudd Scholarship, Peggy Rudd Scholarship Fund for education for kids. And it's, you know, we've been contributing to it because I'm secretary of that organization and contributing to it for a number of years. And so this last Unity Banquet was the first time that we actually had enough money to start giving money to two different students, full-time students, and you know, it was a great honor to, you know, to be able to do that. And you know, that's one of those things, if you just keep working at it a little at a time, things change and things get better.
That's true. You know, the parents and friends of lesbians and gays, along with Hatch, joined together and raised over $87,000, which they awarded to 18 gay youths recently, and that is, they started out, you know, just a little bit, and that has grown and is helping young members of our community to further their education. And it also is a mentoring program so that they have exposure to the community, to community organizations, to politics, activism.
And exactly.
Isn't that amazing? Can you imagine it being in high school and having something like that be available to you?
Not in my high school when I was there.
In Beaumont, was it?
Yeah. Beaumont, Texas?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I had made it to Houston by then, but I don't think they would have.
The best I could do is hide myself inside a football uniform.
And I still bet you look cute.
And it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
They didn't hurt me. Well, they did, but it was, you know, it was for a whole different reason. Well, another thing that we alluded to a moment ago, the Houston GLDT Political Caucus is now screening candidates for its endorsement meeting. August 2nd is the endorsement meeting where the endorsements will be made by the Houston GLDT Political Caucus PAC, endorsing candidates.
Will that be at the usual place at the 3400 Montrose?
It will be, yes.
Second floor, suite 207.
207. And if
at 7 o'clock.
At 7 o'clock. And if you need any other information or want to find out more, you can go to the website, www.hglbtpc.org.
Well, you know, this is the first time in a long time that the whole collective of Queer Voices has been together, except that, like, tonight Joan is absent because she's, you know,
well,
in Iowa. But I mean, as far as those of us who physically are coming to the studio, and so it's, you know, JD's back from all his activities, and Jack's
hobnobbing with all the celebrities.
Yes, and Jack's getting a little bit of a respite from being the executive director of Pride. So it's good to have everyone together, and we do appreciate so much the listeners out there that you tune in, and remember you can listen via the web, and especially that we are archive. So if there's a Queer Voices show within the last 60 days that you might have missed, then you can go to the website
www.kpft.org,
and there you'll find us, and you can listen to those programs. I'm going to have to listen later to hear all of that wonderful interview with James Campbell.
Because you weren't paying attention?
Yeah. Actually, I was, and I was really...
Weren't you arm wrestling someone?
I was really impressed with a lot of what he was saying, and I even have to pat myself on the back because he
will do that for you.
I know what y'all do to me. He mentioned that Sue Null from PFLAG, Sue and Jim Null, had arranged a meeting with the editorial board at the Chronicle, and that was the beginning of changes that have taken place in the way the Chronicle reports. Well, I had conducted a media workshop that Sue attended where I said, you know, you can arrange an editorial board meeting. You can meet with the representatives from the paper or ask for a meeting. And by golly, she went out and did it. And that's how that came about. So, you know.
Are you trying to take credit?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good.
Definitely.
I just wanted to get that
I'm
clear.
Giving myself a pat on the back of how our connections and our networking pays off.
Absolutely.
And works, because that's really what builds our community. And you always know somebody that needs a resource or has a resource. And putting those two things together is what builds our community.
Well, I think if you look at that and take it to its purest form, it's a matter that no matter what you're doing out there, every little bit, you never know what the end result of your small effort can be. It could turn into something that changes a whole newspaper's disposition, or a radio station, or a TV station. You know, we don't know how we affect other people and affect our community unless we get out and do something.
Well, to paraphrase Ani DiFranco, wherever I am, I move, and therefore there is movement. So I'll be part of the movement. And one of the ways to find out things that are going on is to go to Carol Wyatt's socialnoteshouston.com. You can read her political rants. She will join us again on Queer Voices for more ranting. And so we want to thank Carol for being here tonight.
Oh, and Jeff Reed with the Houston Equal Rights Alliance, thanking him for being here and talking with us. And,
of course, James Campbell, who is the Houston Chronicle's Reader's Representative, and he talked to us about what's going on at the Houston Chronicle and how they form their information on the editorials and what else goes on. And, of course, next week, Jennifer Reed talks with, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce that first name there.
Isaiah Carey
from Channel 26 Fox News here, which is different than the network.
Yes,
thank goodness.
Of course, we'll have This Way Out, and it is J.D. Doyle's fourth Monday of the month, so it's Queer Music Heritage.
Absolutely. And come join us next week.
I don't know what his theme is, though, for next time.
I don't know. JD, are you out heritage. There? What's the theme?
What?
Queer Music Heritage.
Yeah, it's always Queer Music Heritage, Jack. But
you it's know. The Out Music Awards.
The Out Music
there,
Awards.
Thank you, JD.
And thank you, Glenn, for engineering. And thank you, Ellie, for helping out in this studio.
And this is Jennifer Rain. Good night.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday starting at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, an internationally syndicated program, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. The Queer Voices Collective includes Glenn Holt, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned on tonight's program, visit queervoices.org. For Queer Radio with Attitude, listen every Saturday night at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper and Friends. Stay tuned now for World Village Cafe, coming up next. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston.
Open Journal is our experiment in community-inspired radio. Regular listeners just like you come to KPFT Studios to produce their own programs. Sometimes Open Journal is talk, sometimes it's music, sometimes it's controversial, but Open Journal is always eclectic and always KPFT. Open Journal has hosted a variety of shows, and it's about to undergo some changes. Starting August 1st, KPFT will be making modifications to improve Open Journal, addressing months-long backups and ensuring instant access. Some Open Journals will be shortened to 30 minutes. Some of our monthly Open Journals will shift to a bi-monthly schedule. Visit KPFT.org and click on our programming link for details and to give your feedback. Open Journal airs weekdays at noon, right after BBC headlines at 12:01. Visit KPFT.org to learn more. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
This is 90.1 KPFT. Don't miss the 17th annual Houston Press Music Awards Showcase on Sunday, July 30th, starting at 4 p.m. in downtown Houston. Sample the sounds of over 60 local bands and surrounding Main Street venues. And don't forget to let your voice be heard on this year's Houston Press Music Awards ballot. You become the critic. Cast your vote by Sunday, July 30th. Ballots are available in this week's Houston Press and at HoustonPress.com. The results will be published in the August 3rd issue of Houston Press. Wristbands for the showcase and special discounts are available at participating locations. The Houston Press Music Awards is brought to you in part by KPFT. Pick up this week's Houston Press, log on to HoustonPress.com or call 713-280-2448 for more information. This is 90.1 KPFT.
KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. This is the World Village Cafe. Hello, Houston. It is 10 p.m. and welcome.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.